We present the news quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello. And welcome to the news quiz. We start the show with an extract from the New Zealand television news website, read by Susan Ray.
A woman who sold drugs to undercover New Zealand cops while breastfeeding has been caught in a huge bust.
Our thanks to Linda Osborne for taking to Twitter to send in that bit of narcotic nonsense. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Kerry Godleman. And opposite them, on my left, Frankie Boyle and Samira Ahmed. Jeremy, who have become bros in order to fight Brexit?
Oh, dear God. It's Cameron and Sadiq Khan. And Cameron was very, very excited because he doesn't get to stand next to brown people very often. He managed to restrain himself. He didn't say, yo, you is a Muslim, bruv. But he did call him a proud Muslim, which I think is probably an insult because it's a sin in Islam, as it is in all the three Abrahamic religions. Pride is a deadly sin. It's one of the seven dwarves of the apocalypse, in fact. But people said, this is great, this show of cross-party unity, and this is what Corbyn should be doing. But it misfires. This is what went wrong for Labour in the Scottish referendum. People hate that because they feel they're being talked down to by the establishment, seeing Labour and Tory being cosy. That's why they hate the daily politics. You've got Andrew Neil looking like a man who enjoys the smell of his own farts, sitting there as his hair transplant desperately tries to reject him. And then you've got two jacketless planks sitting there joshing playfully, saying, oh, you would say that. Oh, come on, you're better than that. And they all get on fabulously well, despite supposedly being opposite ends of the spectrum, and the only thing they're opposite ends of is a sofa that's narrower than the combined width of their arses. We sit there thinking, look, we want class war, not loose women with statistics. But Sadiq Khan's gone feral now that he's mayor. He's not Labour anymore, he's just mayor. Being mayor of London, you're just a celebrity who signs off bus designs and assists the rich in driving the poor out of the city.
It's been kind of broadly racist on both sides, the campaign. I mean, I guess we have as a country to admit at some point that we aren't great to immigrants and that immigrants do end up with jobs that British people just can't face doing, which is why Farage has got a German wife. There's a sort of callousness in the whole debate, and you see it with the kind of refugee question as well. People go, oh, someone's rowed over here in a sink, send him back home. And you're like, don't send him back home. There's Olympics coming up. Give him a passport.
I think Labour's message that the EU is rubbish but better than not being in it has probably got more traction than this sort of idea of love for Europe, which is for years the whole Euro enthusiasm has been sort of very much in the possession of these sort of Europhilic liberals who are just in awe of the facilities in French campsites, not noticing how the French treat people who are forced to live in tents. So it's just this sort of love, you know, the Liberal Democrats, they love everything about Europe, the cheeses, the voting systems, and so people are just turned off by that. If you say, you know what, the EU is rubbish, but leaving it will be chaos, people go, oh, I'll stay in then.
Witherspoons are saying we should leave, aren't they? Witherspoons have printed up something.
Oh, that's changed my mind then.
I know. I like it when a high street chain gets involved. I'm hanging on for what Laura Ashley's got to say about it. They printed up 200,000 beer mats with sort of angry points regarding the IMF, actually. It's not even the EU. Would you go with what Witherspoons?
I think not beer mats.
You can get a full English breakfast and a pint of Pinot Grigio before 10 a.m. It's not necessary.
But that's quintessential Britishness to me. There's nothing more British than moaning about Europe while you drink German beer and French wine that's been served to you by a Polish guy.
The Brexit camp, big on the Australian point system. It's all based on Australia. And you think, well, the thing about that is Australia only lets in... Well, it's news to the Aborigines, but theoretically, Australia only lets in people with the skills that Australia is lacking. Given that Australia is lacking absolutely all skills, it means anybody who can master cutlery is allowed to go there.
You know, there's a huge... They've documented a huge number of Brits are coming back from Australia, and they've actually found out one of the big reasons they come back is because Australia's got such terrible television.
What, repeats of On the Buses and Last of the Summer Wine?
Sexily, this is the EU referendum. This week, David Cameron appeared campaigning alongside Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan. Or, as the Prime Minister would have put it a couple of weeks ago, he allowed himself to be photographed alongside an extremist, thus demonstrating serious question marks about his judgment. Boris Johnson and Michael Gove appeared together this week calling for the post-Brexit introduction of a points system. And what do points mean? No, they mean a more rigorously policed and merit-based immigration system. Do grow up. Under this system, migrants will be required to have a good grasp of English and be able to use common everyday phrases such as which way is the railway station, how much for these potatoes, and why does the leader of this country keep referring to my loved ones as a swarm? Also this week, Wetherspoons have introduced pro-Brexit beer mats to more than 900 pubs nationwide. I stand entirely behind Wetherspoons' policies on exit from the European Union and a recalibration of our relationship with the IMF, said a 14-year-old optimistically trying to get served. 2 points to Jeremy. Kerry, who can sense conspiracy in the air?
This is to do with a film that came out this week about Jeremy Corbyn on the news website Vice. Labour communications chief revealed that the preparations for Prime Minister's question times are being leaked by a member of his own staff. So there's a mole in the leadership's inner circle. It's a bit like Reservoir Dogs. It also showed how outraged the Labour leader is at bias against him, and he strikes out at the BBC for its disgusting and shallow coverage of him. There was a lot of emphasis on people trying to persuade him to dress smartly. Like, one of his aides was sort of constantly... It was like a parent telling a teenager on a Saturday night, like, no, Jeremy, you can't go out dressed like that.
He does hate the press, but you can't really blame him because they are making his life hell. They're outside his house every single morning. And I sometimes come out of the house and there's a huge dog turd on the pavement, but at least it doesn't follow me down the street.
To be fair, it's not journalists who are creating what... I think it's politicians talked about a febrile atmosphere this week. It's just, we're just watching this car crash happen on television. And what was really interesting about the choice of going to Vice was... Because there's a very large and significant number of people, and they complain to programmes like Newswatch as well, saying that, you know, the BBC is biased against Jeremy Corbyn. But the thing is, the Tories accuse the BBC of being biased in their news coverage, so it's a sign that it's not biased. It's just its job to be critical. And so they obviously thought, we'll go with Vice, because the reporter was a Labour Party member who said, I signed up when Jeremy Corbyn stood for the leadership. But it didn't occur to them that they would be filming the same stuff that anyone else would get. And the documentaries come out just as negatively as if anyone else had made it. They seem genuinely surprised that if you let journalists in to film what you're really like, they might show what you're really like.
They must know what a behind-the-scenes documentary is going to look like. And they can't be thinking at the moment, hey, we've got our message so honed that it's time to show people where the magic happens. Let's pull back the curtain and show them the Dream Factory.
What about Prime Minister's questions, where there's an obvious target, which was Ian Duncan Smith had just resigned over the whole welfare cuts, and he said, oh, well, I'm not going to mention it because it's not my job to. Yeah, why is it odd for journalists to say that might be bad judgment?
There was a very odd moment there, wasn't there, when his advisor said, the best thing we can do is to try and rattle David Cameron. And you're like, you're not going to rattle David Cameron. He killed a British citizen with a missile. You're not going to rattle him. So we're going to get under his skin. He's a psychopath. He could machine gun a lifeboat and maintain a resting heart rate.
Point that there hasn't been much coverage on the whole Tory expenses scandal and all that. It's been exposed about the expenses and then that they spent too much on their election campaign.
It's a huge story, is that they might have to rerun the election that Farage lost because the Tories lavished expenses on hotels. I'd always understood that Conservatives try very hard to keep hotel bills low, which is why you'd get two rigorously heterosexual men sharing a bedroom.
What about the idea that somebody is leaking the questions?
There's probably a spy in there. The Labour Party in Westminster hates him. He's got about 20 MPs on it because he's never spent any effort, you know, schmoozing or building a profile or, you know, making allies. He's just been campaigning. He's better known among prisoners on death row in Texas than he is in the Parliamentary Labour Party. And a lot of those, you know, shiny suited and booted Labour MPs, they won't even have known what he looked like. And if they did, it's because they've been told never to speak to that man. So he's got very few allies in Westminster. So there's obviously going to be somebody in there spying.
Do you think the suspicion of the leak is why he sometimes asks really surprising questions?
That's what you should do. You should ask Cameron surprise and general knowledge questions. Do you know about the 14th century halberd, Mr. Cameron? Him on the back foot. They need a media manager, don't they? They need someone brittle, like not an Alistair Campbell necessarily, but there's so many open goals for them and the Tories are in such disarray, you almost feel that just someone like Sam Allardyce, Mick McCarthy, someone that would just say to them, you were bloody rubbish, Corbyn, you were shit today, you asked a stupid question about halberds. Mick McCarthy's a sort of dour northern football manager who could sort of make the lyrics to Zippity Doodah sound like a terminal illness diagnosis.
Perkily, this is a documentary about Jeremy Corbyn, wherein the Labour leader suggested that the BBC are attempting to destroy his leadership. He may be right, he may be wrong. All we can say for certain is that someone is still bitter about not being asked to present Top Gear. All this was contained in a documentary Corbyn made for Vice News, which his advisers mistakenly believed to be a publication dedicated to woodwork and joinery. In other news, the police have been granted more time to investigate allegations of electoral fraud by the Conservative Party in South Thanet, allegations that could have wide-reaching implications across the country. What is the world coming to when the government of a major Western country can't even suppress an investigation into their own electoral expenses? Yet another traditional skill gone the way of blacksmithery, lathe plastering, witch detection and the use of landlines. 2 points to Kerry. Frankie, who's supporting Donald Trump in his search for a new career?
Oh, is it Kim Jong-un, the North Korean leader? He came out and said that Donald Trump was a very wise man. I think you can see, if you're in North Korea and you're living on a diet of boiled straw and acorns, and you're starving, you can see the appeal of Donald Trump because his hair looks to be made from candy floss. I think we could stage a successful coup in North Korea led by Bertie Bassett. I sort of admire Trump in a way. Initially, I thought that Trump was like someone playing a president in a porno. And as it's gone along, he's kind of aged and he now looks more like someone robbing a bank wearing a rubber mask of his own face. And the incredible thing about him is that he's managed to run a fear campaign, and it's worked, on a country of people who are on anti-anxiety medication. They're heavily drugged people, and he's managed to scare them. I actually think his weird kind of facial colour might be an attempt to just kind of cut through their fog of medication and register on their senses, because he's sort of getting brighter. Hillary Clinton is wearing brighter, kind of blocky colours as well. This might be why it's called the primaries.
A lot of Trump's appeal actually is among very poor white working class people in the Rust Belt who've lost their jobs. Because of it's the same as happened with Tata Steel. The Chinese are dumping steel. God knows what they must be eating in China. But this is what's this is what's caused, you know, massive unemployment among people in the Rust Belt. And they say Trump will set up trade barriers, and that's enough for us. We don't like anything else he says, but you know, we haven't got jobs.
There are Bernie Sanders supporters who would rather Trump won than let Hillary.
I think it's part of the thing with Trump that he's normalised a kind of madness. So he starts his rallies with instructions of what to do when a riot breaks out. You know, that's normal. That's not normal. You can't imagine the Lib Dem conference starting with someone going, well, first of all, let's talk about what to do when this inevitably descends into violence.
There's a natural affinity, isn't there, between power-crazed people with strange hair. And I mean, people like, or with no hair, like Putin and Trump and Kim Novak. There's this admiration for, like, strongmen, isn't there? This idea that, oh, yeah, at least you know where you are with someone that will kill you if you step out of line. Beat you up if you heckle at his rallies or, like, send your family to live in a gulag, you know. But you know where you are. It's like when the Cray twins ran the East End. You could leave your front door open and Ronnie would come in and nail your face to the telly, but you knew where you were. You knew where they were. They never mugged old ladies. They'd shoot them in the face, but they never mugged them.
You don't know what Putin, how he praised Donald Trump this week? He called him talented and colourful, which sort of sounds like the kind of thing a tactful teacher would say about a kid at school who eats glitter and is friends with a sandwich. But do you think Trump could be the person to bring peace to the Korean Peninsula? I mean, do you look at him and think, you know, this could be a new Mandela?
He could. He could bring peace to Korea simply by the fact that he'll divert his forces to invade Mexico. I mean, they literally can't let him take power. They'll have to sort of build a fake Pentagon. Yeah, this is it. Seems a bit shaky. No, this is it. Yeah. Tell him he's killing Assad and hand him a PS4 controller.
It might be. I think it might be quite funny if, in a morbid way, if Trump wins in America, America's standing in the world will be so low they'll be too embarrassed to invade anywhere. That Navy SEAL's about to burst in somewhere and shoot some kind of Al Qaeda leader. The Al Qaeda leader will look them in the face and the Navy SEAL will go, I know.
Bitingly, this is the news from North Korean state media, who have praised US presidential candidate Donald Trump, an endorsement that for most people would be about as welcome as a birthday message written on the lawn in flaming excrement. Still, after a troubled primary season, it's nice that Donald has picked up that all-important Pyongyang endorsement. ISIS have yet to declare a preference, as they've been far too busy campaigning for Brexit amid the hostile and hostile and unfriendly terrain of David Cameron's fevered imagination. Donald Trump is apparently delighted to have the support of Kim Jong-un and feels that if he can just get Bono and Alan Yentob on board, he'll finally have the ear of the entire axis of evil. 2 points to Frankie. Samira, which gorilla will be missed?
This is Harambe, this silverback gorilla in Cincinnati Zoo, who was in his enclosure minding his own business, and then a small child actually fell into the enclosure, and there's a dispute about the child not being supervised, that it managed to clamber through all the barriers and got down there. And there's video footage of it being dragged around. Well, the mother called 911 thinking that was the quickest way to get someone to try and come and help, and the zoo shot the gorilla dead. In a kind of modern way that, I suppose, in Puritan times you would have put people in the pillory or something, everyone has decided that the parents are evil. I mean, if you watch the video, that child being dragged around is pretty scary.
When it comes to endangered species, it's important to remember that Donald Trump is about to become president of the United States. But the question is, why wasn't this toddler armed?
I did feel for them. I mean, we've all let our kids fall 15 foot into a gorilla enclosure. You take your eye off them for a minute, it easily happens. And there is a bit of you, when you tell your kid not to do a thing and then they go and do it, there's a bit of you that's like, I don't want you to obviously die, but I wouldn't mind you learning your lesson. Like now, if I say don't go in a gorilla enclosure, don't go in a gorilla enclosure. That's like a really stupid thing.
But people were literally saying that, weren't they? They were going, you can't leave them alone for a minute or they'll be burrowing under a wire fence. And you're like, it was 4 years old. Have you seen a four-year-old try and cross a room? They go down like they're in platoon or something. How do they break into a cage?
They teleport. If you put a baby on in the middle of a double bed and turn round, it's on the floor by the time you turn.
If someone's a worse parent than you, it always makes you feel quite relieved. That's what I go on Mumsnet for, just to check in. But I'm not the worst parent. So some days you're like, all right, so you have watched 7 hours on the iPad and eaten your body weight in Haribo, but I didn't drop you in a gorilla enclosure.
to be honest, people are only in the zoo because they're a bad parent. You know, the only people that go to zoos are, like, custody dads on a Saturday, and a lot of them will have envied that gorilla.
Do you think it would be safer if the zoo's gorillas, if they were kept further away from the public? In, I don't know, in Africa, perhaps? Does anyone know the correct way to deal with an angry silverback?
You use a tin tray of chopped oranges to lure it onto a Velcro mat. The important thing is that mat has to be very secure.
Depressingly, this is the story of the silverback gorilla who was shot dead by keepers at Cincinnati Zoo after a four-year-old boy fell into his enclosure. The boy's parents have been accused of neglect and have received death threats on social media, something that is usually reserved for only the most heinous of crimes, such as being a woman and expressing literally any opinion. The zookeepers were praised for their rapid and undeniably effective reaction. It's good to know that all those hours of endlessly and seemingly unnecessary gorilla shooting drills finally paid off. It worries me slightly that American zookeepers are armed, though it would have made all the difference to me at Pensthorpe Waterfowl Park when I had to rely on my wits alone to resolve a particularly nasty standoff with a flamingo. We all like to protect our eggs, love, but there really are limits. 2 points to Samira. And at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Kerry have 5, but Frankie and Samira have 6. We start round two with a sign from the entrance to a Lincolnshire farm.
Free manure. Bring your own bag. Donations welcome.
Thanks to Russ from Waltham, North East Lincolnshire, for dumping that upon us. Kerry, who's in store for a quieter shopping experience?
This is the decision of Marks and Spencers to stop playing music in their shops. They've decided they've got a new boss, Mr. Mark Rowe, and he said he wants to appeal to the senior customer, lure them back in, and now they'll be shopping in silence, which I think is a good decision. Marks and Spencers is sort of like the gran of the high street, and I don't want to listen to my gran's record collection, to be honest. I go to Marks and Spencers to buy massive knickers in packs of 5 and kids' school uniforms and elasticated waist trousers, and I don't want to do it to a pipe music version of Uptown Funk. I don't like music in shops anyway. I don't like pipe music, and I don't like it when they go the other way, when it's all sort of cool. Like, you know, again, Topshop, and they've got a DJ.
Yeah.
I don't like all that. I make really bad decisions when I think I'm being cool, because you start bopping around, you're like, yeah, I'm cool, and then you buy a hat. You can't ever carry off a hat.
There's subliminal messages in Marks and Spencer's that you think you're listening to sort of the Carpenters, and it'll be going, jambalaya, crawfish, buy pants. Fillet gumbo. You go in there to quickly buy some pants
in
and then leave before you realise quite how tragic it is that you're buying pants in Marks and Spencer's. You know, it's not like you're going to linger. I love this song. Oh, God.
I think it's nice to have something to hang along to while you're inspecting the weave on a chino.
They want to lure the older person back in, and that they don't know the older person is jaded and cynical and won't be so easily manipulated.
Also, the older people don't want this music on even though they can't hear it.
Isn't there, there's actually an organisation called Pipe Down, and you think of all the issues in the world. I mean, like, Hacked Off, you think that's quite important, maybe not as important as war and terror, and it's just about canned music.
I think
and
you're being unfair. That's only their primary objective. Their secondary objective is to annex the Sudetenland.
I don't like any music. When you're on hold, I want silence. I like an occasional pip to know that you haven't died. But, like, I don't want to hear any music. When you're on hold to BT and you're waiting, and the music just sucks out your soul.
I'd rather have that than when they make idle chit-chat. And they sort of say, so, how's your day been? And you think, you really want to know? Really want to know how
I've been on hold all day.
I've been on hold. I'm 55. I've got IBS. Most of my friends are dead. Do you want me to carry on?
Ergonomically, this is the news that Marks and Spencer are dropping the playing of piped music from 300 of their UK stores. So now, when you're staring in a state of indecision at a paisley duvet set, there'll be nothing to drown out the howling voices inside your head. Marks and Spencer originally used piped music as a means of enticing all of the rats out of their stores. But in an unexpected consequence, they quickly found the only customer they had left was a small boy on crutches. The din of recorded music will now be replaced by the din of married couples using an argument over a dine-in meal deal to liven up their arid desert of a marriage. Still, it's a night out, isn't it? 2 points to Kerry. Frankie, who says businesses shouldn't kick off about time off?
ACAS, the conciliation service, ACAS, have said that employers should give people time off if they want to watch the games in the European Championship. I guess it varies across the country a bit, because I know it's different in Scotland. We've already got a 3-day national holiday when England go out. There's a kind of stereotype, I think, really, of Scottish people that we want to see the England team lose all the time, and we don't. I mean, probably the majority of people would rather see the team's plane crash into an oil refinery. I mean, I'm going to be in London during the championship, and I'm going to be down the pub watching every England game, fiddling in my pocket with my Argos Universal remote control. I think, if we're honest, England got an easy ride qualifying. They had to play San Marino, a country so small that when the ball goes out of play, they have to ask Italy to give it to them back. I don't know. Maybe like, I think if you want a day off from work to watch the England game, you should be allowed it. Because the last thing you want to hear going into surgery as you slip under the anaesthetic is someone going, I can't believe that prick's not playing Vardy.
Are you going to take time off to watch football, do you think, Samira?
No, I don't.
Excruciatingly, this is the advice of the Employment Conciliation Service, ACAS, who are telling businesses to be relaxed about employees who take time off work to watch the home nations in Euro 2016. I had to say the tournament hadn't really piqued my interest, but when I heard that an Employment Conciliation Service had gotten involved, well, as you can imagine, that changed everything. Big fan of ACAS myself, even collecting all the stickers. See me after, I'm packing swapsies. But they're right, everything should stop when the home nations are playing, even paramedics. You've got to remember, most things probably clock themselves. Firms are being urged to be flexible with staffing, which is obviously code for random mass sackings. 2 points to Frankie. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they'd like to share?
This was taken from The Times. It was sent in by Richard Selly of Betchworth. And it's a Times biography of a scout leader. He has had his fair share of mishaps over the years, including a boy getting stuck on barbed wire while scrumping and another nailing his foot to a pallet, but said he had enjoyed every minute.
Samira.
This is from David Darrah, and it was taken from the Isle Valley News Parish magazine. The low self-esteem support group will meet on Thursday at 7 p.m. Please use the back door.
Thank you, and now let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Kerry have 10, but this week's winners are Frankie and Samira with 11. Before we leave you, here is an advert from Frimley Focus magazine, sent in by Paul Dove.
Small, friendly group keen to encourage tennis players of any ability for fitness and exercise. Mixed doubles, singles or threesomes welcome.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Kerry Godleyman, Frankie Boyle and Samira Ahmed. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Susan Ray. The chair's script was written by Madeline Brettingham, Max Davis and James Kettle, with additional material by Liam Byrne and Dan Hooper. The producer was Paul Sheehan, and it was a BBC Studios production.